Good morning and welcome to Storylines. I'm your host, Christine Cowley, and our guest this morning is Muskoka author Peter Jennings. Peter, welcome to Storylines.
Well, thank you, Christine. As I recall, I was your first guest when you first launched this series, and now I'm the last guest of the year, so we're kind of bookending, aren't we?
And isn't that the way to close out this year?
Absolutely. And so, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Peter, you're here to talk about the second book that you've brought to HBR,
yes.
And it's called Why Being Happy Matters, Discover How the Power of Joy Will Energize Your Life. And Peter, you've told us that people who are happy actually earn more money, make better decisions, perform better, have more self-confidence, maintain better relationships, and a whole lot of other great things. And if that's not enough to make you want to be happy, then your book actually gives us 37 shining examples of how it's done. So tell us a little bit about the interviews that you did for this book.
Sure. Happy to do that, Christine. You're right. I talked to 37 people from Canada, the U.S., Europe, Australia, and Asia. People from all different ethnic backgrounds and economic backgrounds and that sort of thing. And it was a fascinating experience because I truly learned something from each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this book, Why Being Happy Matters, will be both a source of inspiration but also a resource,
mm-hmm.
because I learned something key from each one of those 37 people, and I showcase that at the end of the book. I also talk about 10 happiness breakthroughs. And there's another part of the book that I think will be a resource. One of the people I interviewed, there were 7 PhDs who are actively studying what they call positive psychology, i.e. happiness. One of them was Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. And Tal, this is quite incredible. He teaches at Harvard University, where his course on happiness is the most popular course at Harvard. Can you imagine that?
Well, after reading your book, I can.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the things that you've talked about in your book is one of the big discoveries you made in conducting these interviews is that we are in the midst of what you call a happiness revolution. And as you've just begun to tell us, we're applying, you know, the greatest minds are applying what they know to analyzing happiness and reporting on it. Now, why do you think this is happening at this time in history?
Interesting question, Christine. And you're right. We are in the midst of a happiness revolution. Happiness truly is a game changer. And this is not a clinical opinion. It's simply mine from having, I guess, become somewhat of an expert on the subject. The world is dealing with so much stress and anxiety at the moment. Whether people are concerned about Donald Trump becoming president, what's he going to do? Or whether they're concerned about Brexit, you know,
mm-hmm.
Britain pulls out of the EU.
Yeah.
What happens to the European Common Union? I mean, does it fall apart? The war in Syria and the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are exiting that country, and where are they going to end up? People
yes.
are concerned about the big tent things and building up anxiety. Closer to home, people are concerned about, you know, paying their mortgage, keeping
yeah.
their kids in school, keeping their job, for heaven's sake. Christine, my daughter-in-law, Megan, teaches grade 5 in Toronto, and I was talking to her recently and said, Meg, how are the kids? And she said, oh, my gosh, they're all so full of anxiety. I said, what? They're like 10 years old.
Gosh.
And she said, it's all handed down from the parents. The parents are all facing stress.
And carrying this.
And carrying it, and they feed it down to the kids, and then the kids bring it into class. And she, do you know what FOMO is? She introduced me to a term. She said, all the parents are suffering FOMO. And I said, what the heck's that? Fear of missing out.
Oh, yes, I've heard the term
yeah.
in its long form. But, you know, Peter, you bring to mind the fact that with social media, with access to information and the information explosion that we're inundated with, you know, we know more than perhaps is healthy for us to know or be able to assimilate and just stay on board.
Yeah.
It used to be, okay, 50 years ago, you worried about the mortgage, you worried about your job, you worried about the health of your family and loved ones. But you didn't have to worry about the rest of everything else that was going on. And yet now, because we're aware of it, that anxiety creeps up on us. But your 37 interviewees have each found a way that they manage all of the stressors in their lives to overcome stress. And the interesting thing, one of the very interesting things I found in your book, Peter, because it's just such a wonderful read.
Oh, thank you,
Christine. And thank you for writing it, because
you
need
it.
But one of the interesting things, because I could see myself in it, you began, this book found you. You were sitting down to dinner with friends, and the friends were relating something that happened in their lives that you confess would have just messed you up. And they just laughed about it and rode through it. And it got you thinking, and being a writer and being a creator, and you thought, gee, like, how can I create that attitude in my own life? So tell us about how that evolved into this book.
Yeah, well, there were actually two, I guess, signposts that put me on to write this. And indeed, my goal has really begin to become somebody who writes books that do inspire. The first example, which you just cited, I was at a cocktail party. This was many years ago, really before people had cell phones at the ready, and a couple was there at the party, and they said, oh, by the way, don't try and phone us. Bell cut our phone off. I said, what? And she said, well, Bob thought I paid the bill. I thought he paid the bill. Neither of us paid it, and they cut us off. So we're going to pay it and get it back on. And she's laughing. Mm-hmm. And you're right, Christine. I was going, oh, my gosh. I mean, if that happened to me, I wouldn't be laughing. I wouldn't be telling anybody. I'd be embarrassed. I'd been chagrined. And I went home and thought about that and thought, hey, Jennings, maybe you're taking yourself a little bit too seriously. These people are just saying, hey, they cut our phone off because we forgot to pay the damn bill.
Yes.
You know? The other person that inspired me to write the book is a guy by the name of Rick. May I tell you a little bit about him?
Okay.
Because Rick is a genuinely happy guy, and he was my second source of inspiration. Listen to what Rick told me about himself. He grew up with an alcoholic mother. She was a really bad alcoholic in the family. This caused a great deal of family arguments and discordant scenarios between his mother and father. Eventually, his mother died of breast cancer. Then his sister died of breast cancer. Rick married his university sweetheart, had two wonderful children. She got ovarian cancer and died. To deal with this and put it behind him, Rick called his best friend Mike. They were both motorcycle guys, and said, come on, let's get out of Dodge and go on a tour. They went down to the southern U.S. Within the first week, Rick came around a bend, I believe in South Carolina, and Mike lay sprawled on the center of the highway. He had wiped out. He was dead. Rick ended up in the hospital. He returned home, and he and Mike's widow, Diane, became consoling each other. They eventually started developing a relationship.
Yes.
But the fates were not done with Rick. She got cancer and died.
And at this point, he's saying, okay, hang on. This is the story of Job all over again.
Yeah, and Christine, you're shaking your head. I can see you saying, this guy's happy. But listen to what Rick told me. He said, Peter, there's a positive side to everything. You just have to accept that, or life can get you down. Seems to me that when things go wrong, human nature gets some folks asking, what did I do to make this disaster happen? Me, I say, what did I do to get this far and achieve so much? How can I now move ahead?
Mm.
What a different attitude.
Mm-hmm.
He also cited for me, he's a big football fan, and he cites a famous quote from legendary coach Vince Lombardi, who said after his team lost the game, we haven't lost, we're only temporarily behind. Rick told me, I love that quote. It probably does a very good job of summing up who I am and my approach to life and to finding happiness. If it's not always there, I'm confident it's just around the corner. That, and I don't need more. I'm happy with the here and now. So those two stories, I guess, are the ones that prompted me to really start investigating this subject matter. And I thought, yeah, there's a book here. Why Being Happy Matters is the result.
And it's a book we need, as I said earlier, Peter. It's a book we need because we are so focused on all the negatives. And if you just turn that glass around a little bit, you may see that it's the half full is a lot more fun and inspiring to focus on.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Peter, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, there are so many beautiful nuggets you've given us in this book, and I want to touch on a few of them. And, I'll throw out just a couple for people to be thinking about during the break. And
sure.
That we have so much to be grateful for, that each of us is accountable for our own happiness, and that you can learn how to be happy. So we're going to talk some more about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Our guest today is Peter Jennings, happiness expert, and we're going to hear more about how we can learn to be happy and make it part of our mission in life. We'll be back in just a few moments. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Storylines. This is Christine Cowley. Today we are delighted to have with us a happiness expert, author Peter Jennings. Peter, we've been just talking about ways in which we can learn to be happier in our lives. And I mentioned a couple of them before the break. There's so many. Let me pick some of the highlights for me from your book. Expressing gratitude every day for the many wonderful things in our lives. Being thankful for all experiences, good and bad. And you've just given us an example of one of your interviewees, Rick, who talked about being grateful for all his experiences.
Yes.
Some of which would have taken us down a dark path.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was quite incredible, because I would suggest that of the 37 people I interviewed from around the world, some of them struck me as being kind of hardwired to be happy. And others, people like Rick, I think, has probably always been happy, but he went through such terrible, terrible situations,
yes,
but was able to come out of it. You know,
yes.
So it was really fascinating to talk to so many of these people. And by the way, you call me an expert. I don't like to think of myself as an expert. I'm just a guy who writes books.
I think of you
books.
As a happiness expert, Peter.
Well, you
make
know what?
Me happy.
About that, Christine, I'm delighted to make you happy. Dr. Christine Carter,
yes,
who works at the University of California, the Berkeley campus, and she's got a stretch of PhD initials up her arm.
Yes.
And she truly is a happiness expert. She said to me after we talked for 2 hours, Peter, you are a happiness expert.
Mm.
I said, what? So I was quite buoyed by that.
Now, those of us who are not happiness experts,
right, mm-hmm,
those of us who want to learn how, we can learn from the examples that are given in your book. And some of the things that they talk about are, lighten up, take a more whimsical view of the things that happen to us, and treasure our relationships.
Yes.
But they also, one of the key things that you learn as you're reading these interviews is that there's not one answer, and happiness is an ongoing process of adventure and discovery. So expand on that a little bit, Peter.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, I think it is totally realistic for anybody to have the odd, what I'd call a blue day, or a blue afternoon,
yeah,
or whatever, to think that anybody is just going to be consistently happy throughout their life. Might suggest they're taking some kind of a pharmaceutical stimulant to encourage,
yeah,
that. And that,
yeah,
that ain't happiness, But, yeah, I mean, a couple of the things that I learned, and as I say, at the end of the book, I have 37 key pieces that one that I learned,
yes,
from each individual. But a couple of things to share. We are accountable for our own happiness, and it's up to each of us to take control of how we feel, to your point.
Yes.
You can't just expect it to come here all the time.
Yes, yes.
We do have the power to choose happiness for ourselves. And one way to do that is to absorb the habits of others to become happier ourselves.
Right.
It can be infectious.
Yes.
It really can. I've also learned to more greatly appreciate the advantages I have in my life, not focus on the things I don't have. I learned that from Rick McHale, who said, I'm happy with the here and now. I don't need more.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to lose sight of those things, you know.
And one of the points that you make is that part of becoming more happy and feeling the happiness that we could have in our lives is sharing some of what we have with others. And Peter, if I can, this would be a great moment to mention this wonderful Muskoka Shoebox project. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You bet. If anybody is interested in purchasing a copy of Why Being Happy Matters, may I encourage you to do it in the next 2 days, because I have told the Muskoka Shoebox Project that I will provide them with 20% of all sales of Why Being Happy Matters during the month of December.
Wonderful.
And so if you're interested in buying the book, if you can do it in the next couple of days, we just give that much more money to Muskoka Shoebox. Quickly, if I can put in a plug,
please.
You can buy the book through the website whybeinghappymatters.com. You can buy it locally at Port Carling at the Apothecary and Foodland. I'll have it out in
for the moment.
Yeah,
there will be more, yes.
There will be more in the new year. And then, of course, if you're interested in the e-version, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that kind of stuff, all the information is on whybeinghappymatters.com. But as I say, if you're interested in purchasing the book, do it in the next couple of days and we'll give more money to the Shoebox Project.
Wonderful.
They're a marvelous charity.
And the e-book version, of course, you can have it in your phone,
yes.
And you're sitting in the doctor's office and you're pumping yourself full of this positive energy that reminds you to choose happiness.
Yeah.
And we can all do that.
Yeah. And you know, Christine, there's another thing as I've been exploring this. I'm a great reader. I'm typically reading 3 or 4 books at a time. I think you do as well. One of the books I was reading recently was called Gratitude Works by Robert Emmons.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating book. And what he reminds us is the importance of expressing gratitude to those who deserve it, and how that brings happiness to you and to them. As a result, within the last couple of weeks, I have sent out emails to 3 people who really did something for me. They didn't even think it was a big deal, but it meant a lot to me, and I just said, hey, I want to thank you for doing this. Here's the impact it's had, and thanks so much. Well, the emails you get back is, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Was that meaningful to you? Wow, that makes me feel great. So that's a way of bringing about happiness.
Absolutely.
And it's captured in that book, Gratitude Works, you know, and it does work.
And you know, riffing off of that, something that happened to me recently in the Tim Hortons lineup, and I went to pay for my whatever it was. I was having coffee and some treat that morning, and it was paid for.
Oh, wow.
And they said, no, the fellow ahead of you paid for, you know, some for a couple of people, and I was just, it made my day. So,
yeah.
Of course, I paid it for the next opportunity I had. I threw in a bit of extra money for a couple of people to have their coffee and
wow.
their morning treat because it feels good and it
That's
makes
right.
you happy.
That's right.
Right?
And he didn't. He wasn't trying to ask you out for a date, right?
I don't know. He could have been 3 cars ahead of me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's wonderful. I love that story.
And that is how we share and expand on happiness, is to find those magical ways that we can bring happiness into our lives and create it for others.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
Peter, I don't want to forget to mention your website where people can find out how they can get hold of you for giving your talks and talking about your books. And you're just such an encouraging person to have in the room, Peter. So how can people reach you?
Oh, Christine, thank you. I'm blushing now. You can reach me at peterjennings.me is the website.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I do lots of presentations for Probus clubs and rotaries and libraries and bookstores and that sort of thing. And you're an author yourself. It's always great to meet readers.
Mm-hmm.
As Alan Fotheringham told me, writing is the loneliest profession. It's the only profession you do on your own. And we all sit in our little offices and we think we're writing great things. And then I'm always going, I wonder if anybody's going to like this. You know, and you get out and meet the readers and you find people say, hey, great book. Or, gee, why didn't you do this? Whatever. It's always instructive.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you're interested, peterjennings.me, Emmy.
Yeah, and certainly you bring the book to life by, you know, your personality and your energy.
Hmm.
Now, I wonder... Has working on this book affected your own view of happiness or how you go about life?
Yes. Yes, it has. I found this book evolved over 5 years, by the way. There's a tremendous amount of research one does just to decide who am I going to talk to. So many of these people, people like John Robbins of the Baskin-Robbins family, who famously issued the $1 billion fortune, walked away from it. People like that, Joel Steen from Time Magazine, they're steeped in sort of handlers, and you have to fight your way through. You have to be very patient, very persistent, and eventually you get through and you start, you know, having a conversation.
Yes.
But it does take a lot of work. So it evolved over 5 years, and the reason it took so long is I was very much engaged in it, and I was suddenly introduced to Nicole Moore, the lady who had been attacked by the shark. And when she finally agreed that I would write her story, I put aside happiness, moved into the shark book, and that took a couple of years, and then came back to this and recently completed it. So, it's a long process, but it's a good one. And over that time, I learned a heck of a lot about happiness, and I learned how to integrate it more into my own life. As I say, by just doing things like, hey, let's appreciate what I have, not worry about what I don't have. Mm. You know, little things like that. If you look at all 37 of them in the book, and then the 10 happiness breakthroughs I talk about, and Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar's seven steps, you know.
Okay.
It is a game changer, and it's something you can bring into your life and make work.
And just give us a couple of those 10 breakthroughs, because, you know, each of them you could write a treatise on.
Yeah. Well, one of them being that people have to understand you do have the power to choose happiness for yourself. And one way, as I was saying earlier, is absorb the habits of others to become happier.
Yes.
Happiness is infectious.
Mm-hmm.
And people can choose to be happy or choose not to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
There is where I did a fascinating interview with Deborah Bishop in Oregon, who's working on defining the happiness gene. There is a lot of serious consideration being given to the fact that some people have a happiness gene. Christine, you might have a happiness gene, which means you're just kind of predisposed to being happy. I might have an unhappiness gene, which means I'm predisposed to
being
sad.
We have to work harder.
But for the people who may have, if there is such a thing, an unhappiness gene, or are just way focusing too much on being unhappy, you can change that. That's the real message of the book. You can bring happiness into your life. I'm not saying it's easy, and that's why I included all those steps in the book. But you can bring happiness into your life. It can make a difference. It can really be a game changer, and you do have that power to change your life.
And this book helps us realize that we can be responsible for our own happiness, and we can learn these habits from these 37 people who have found a way to bring more happiness into their lives.
Yes, I honestly believe that. I truly do. And as I say, I'm hoping people will see the book as both inspirational from the profiles of the 37 people, but also look upon it as a resource.
Instructional.
Because I want people to be picking up on some of the points that these folks are making and say, okay, I could bring that into my life and, make a difference.
Wonderful. Peter, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for
having
me.
We need happiness in the middle of the winter storm out there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're going to go out. I want to mention this to listeners. Before you run off to get another cup of coffee this morning, stay by your radio, because we're going to go out with another talent that Peter is going to share with us. And we're going to hear a track by Peter, The Best Is Yet to Come, which we will absolutely live that in 2017. The best is yet to come, Peter.
Absolutely, Christine.
Thank you so much for this morning's
Thank you for having me on HBR. It's always wonderful to chat with you and to be on the Bay.
You've been listening to Storylines on Hunter's Bay Radio, The Bay 88.7. Thank you for joining us this morning. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. I'm here every Thursday morning at 10:05 a.m. talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Please join us again.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. you came along and everything started into hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? Best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain that cup dry. Wait till your charms are ripe for these arms to surround. You think you've flown before, but baby, you ain't left the ground. Wait till you're locked in my embrace. I'm gonna draw you near. Wait till you see that sunshine place. Ain't nothing like it here. Best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? Best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine, and you're gonna be mine.